I'm Kerry, I run a company called FutureGov. You just saw me there. You may know me from the panel. I feel like we go way back now, right? I'm going to talk about kind of organizational approaches to this. So essentially, I'm not going to disagree with anything, sadly, because I know it's quite fun to have an argument on stage, but I'm not going to disagree with anything that Tom said. In fact, hopefully just kind of reiterate some of it and add to some of it as well. Just to briefly introduce FutureGov, we're a digital design agency for public services. We work predominantly with local authorities in the UK, although we do a bit of work with central government as well. There's about 40 of us in the team. We've been going for about 8 or 9 years, and we started, my roots are actually in local government, so is my business partner. We both used to work for a council, and we kind of started FutureGov to try and bring some of these digital tools to the public sector. We work mostly in the UK, but we have a small office in Australia, which is very exciting, and I can talk a bit about that in a sec. But very interestingly, like really similar problems over there. Just a slightly more go get 'em attitude, which I think might be to do with the weather. Annoyingly, I don't get to go to Australia, but my business partner does all the time. So I think if we can all tweet Dominic Campbell and ask him to let me go to Australia, that would be splendid. I'm just, everywhere I go, I try and do that, but it never works. You've heard lots of stuff about digital and how it's kind of changing government. It's changing our lives, isn't it? And you don't really need me to explain what all of these things are. Every one of you will have used one of these at least once, I'm sure. You'll have your views on them. And it's not just the tech that's changing. It's not just that we get to use our smartphones. It's disrupting whole industries. It's changing whole business models. It's not just about the technology. It's about, you know, the nature of work is changing. It's about being a self-employed person on a platform and what that means for the nature of work. So there's a role here for local government, not just to make our technology better, but to also understand what the impacts of these technologies are on our communities and find ways of working with them or against them or around them or whatever we need to do to make sure that we are understanding the technology and making the most of it. And as you've heard from Tom, you know, public services are beginning to do the same. Everything you see here today from the team in Stockport is just a really great example of some of the stuff I'll be talking about, but a really great example of how local authorities are kind of starting to grasp this. The work that GDS has done has been kind of instrumental in paving the way for some of this work for local government. Because we finally have sort of a frame of reference to say, look, this is what it looks like to do agile well at scale and create digital services that are built around the people that use them. And that is, you know, that's what it's all about. Before the work of GDS, we didn't really have much to point to, and we were just like, trust us, it'll be great. But we didn't have anything, you know, to point to. So now we do. So there isn't really an excuse, but what we find is that the gap is still widening. Still, some local authorities aren't doing this stuff. And it's kind of just, it's getting bigger and bigger. And that's the thing that worries me. And so I'd like to kind of, if nothing else, I'd like you to leave today with a bit of a sense of urgency about some of this and start to take it back to your organizations and do something about it, because the gap is just getting bigger and bigger. And the things I see, you know, I see lots of local authorities talk to me about their transformation programs. And I have to kind of say, like, many transformation programs aren't, in my mind, transformational at all. They're focusing on putting our transactions online. They're basically doing what we already do, but digitally, which I'm sorry to say, we should have done 5 years ago. So we're already behind and we're catching up with stuff that that should have happened already. So we kind of, like, the gap, meanwhile, it gets bigger and bigger because technology improves faster and faster, and, you know, it's kind of voice interfaces, other kind of new interface that people are talking about. Maybe it will come to fruition and maybe it won't, but we're miles off that. We haven't even got our most basic transactions online yet in some cases. Now obviously, you know, there are people like Stockport who are kind of leading the pack, but even within the sector, there's kind of a two-speed sector beginning to emerge where you've got those who are like streaking ahead and then those who aren't. So I think what I want to say is it's fine to put your housing benefits stuff online and your transactions online, and sure, we should be able to apply for things online. That feels important. That's a lot of what we deal with in local government, isn't it? Like applying for stuff. But what's really truly transformational is addressing why we have financial vulnerability in the first place, why we have people, so many people, who need financial assistance from the council, and what can we do to address that? And that's the truly transformational stuff that kind of gets lost because we're talking a lot about our transactions. And you know, like I said, we're sort of operating in a context that is far ahead of where we are as a sector. And you know, with the best will in the world, people in Silicon Valley don't really care about poor people because they haven't got any money to pay for any of the services that they're making. It's a bit of a generalization. But you know, that's our job, right? As public servants, that's our job, is to make sure that everybody gets access to stuff, not just the people, the rich people who live in cities who can afford it, but everybody, no matter who they are. And that's our job as public servants, as I see it. You know, this is Margaret, you'll see her again. She lives in Suffolk, she has to get to the GP. There's one bus a week. We spent some time with Margaret on the number one bus. You know, it's actually pretty isolating, and Uber isn't going to serve this market, and it may never serve this market. So what are we going to do about that? How are we going to work with local rural transport providers to try and change the way that transport is delivered using technology, but acknowledging that just get Uber isn't actually the solution here. And it's up to you to choose that. You know, it's a kind of like, we're at a sort of slightly pivotal moment, which is like, do this yourself, take control of this agenda as a sector, or sort of have it be done to you. And find that, you know, you've kind of outsourced everything and there's nothing left to do. So sort of try and take control of it now. So that sounds great. How? How? This is the way FutureGov approaches our work. We have three disciplines within the company. We have service design, product design, and organization design. Service designers, you may have heard Tom mention earlier, so service designers are the people who will go out and understand what the service experience is like from the perspective of the user. So they, in our structure, they are the user researchers as well as the designers, because we believe that people who are kind of understanding the user needs should be as close to the people who are designing them. So in our context, they're the same person. But regardless, they're doing both functions. They are going out and understanding the user need, and then they are coming up with different ways to solve that. They might come up with 20 different ideas for a particular service and start narrowing them down and test out the ones that work and the ones that don't. They then relate really closely to the product design team. Those are the digital people who can design interfaces, design digital products and services, and coders who will actually build the stuff as well. And one of the things that we've learned over the years of FutureGov, you know, we've always had change management as part of our approach, because having come from local government background, we've always understood that you can't just chuck a piece of technology over the wall into a group of social workers and expect them to instantly use it. There's a kind of change approach that needs to go alongside it. But what we've also realized is that this is about much more than change management. This is about redesigning organizations. It's about saying, if we are going to work in this completely different way, some of the stuff we talked about on the panel, if we're going to have different job roles, or if we're going to have different teams, actually, what does our whole organization need to look like? What does our corporate center need to look like? What do our procurement rules, our HR practices and policies, our data and analytics, and that's just the corporate center, what does that need to look like? What is the role of a service manager in the future? It's actually about redesigning the entire organization in a way that makes it possible for that organization to make the best of new technology that's coming out, to be iterative and to work in this agile way. And so that's what our organization design team does, working alongside the service designers and the product designers. And we've done a whole bunch of kind of strategic work with local authorities. I'll give you some examples shortly, but you know, it's kind of about understanding the vision. And it's interesting, somebody credited me with saying this recently, but this isn't my thing, right? I didn't actually coin this, but the thing about, if you've got more than three priorities, you've got no priorities. It's, you know, how many councils have like 10 corporate priorities, right? Because we can't choose them, because that would, you know, probably annoy someone, and we can't afford that politically. So what we end up with is just like these like 10 quite nebulous corporate priorities, and nothing really solid for us to work towards. So where we start is by asking, you know, what's the vision for your organisation? And this is what makes, for me personally, local government way more exciting than central government, sorry Tom, is the fact that local government is about a place. It's not just about, it doesn't need to have necessarily the kind of like the fairly neutral face that central government needs to have, because people's relationships with their local authority are quite different than with central government. So what is the vision for the place and within that the organisation and within that the services that you're providing? Then let's look at, you know, how you actually change those services, which are the kind of the ripest for change, and there's a whole bunch of criteria that you're going to use in order to filter through those different different services, and then you start designing. And I won't go into that in too much detail because I think Tom like really clearly outlined that in his talk, which is just about designing and building using the design process and agile development tools. And it's, I mean, it sounds simple. It's actually not as easy as it sounds, but you know, it's fairly straightforward, and there's loads out there on it. And you know, you might, as a local authority, you might end up kind of running that service yourself, or you might end up going, actually, we've created a really good service here, and it's something we can either trade or spin out, or continue to run ourselves. But there are options at that point. So you need people who are really good at business modelling, who are entrepreneurial. That's not something we really recruit for within local government at the moment. We recruit for people who know how to keep the ship steady. We don't recruit for people who can spot a business opportunity. And is that something that we need to think about? There isn't really, because of the way that services are constructed, I spend a lot of time with councils talking about the front door, which basically means the call centre, and how we get people off the phones and channel shift and all these kinds of like quite familiar problems. But what it's missing is the fact that this kind of front door, this sort of interface, is just, it's an interface to a whole load of complexity. And the customer feels that complexity. So it's not just about making a really slick online transaction. It is actually about redesigning your organisation kind of backwards, so that the customer experience is smooth, because there aren't silos, people are talking to each other, and that you're viewing it as one whole customer experience, not just the thin layer that people get to see when they log onto your website. So I think I've made my point, but maybe we should have some examples. We've worked with different councils and different models over time, and it really just depends on where your council is at and what the appetite is there for, and how much you are kind of willing to do a stop port and go wholeheartedly kind of launch yourself into this, versus whether you're a bit more kind of cautious and you've got to win over some hearts and minds. So if you're kind of in that bracket, if you're in the just starting out with this stuff, then maybe you want to do a couple of demonstrator projects. GDS would call them exemplars. Take a couple of particularly kind of interesting problems and solve those and use them as just one-off projects. Don't create an entire program structure around them. Just do one or two projects to show the power of this way of working. And we've seen lots of people kind of off the back of that then start to grow their digital capability internally. If you're sort of past that stage and you're thinking about, oh yeah, fine, but how do we scale that? Then maybe an innovation lab is the right thing for you. And to be honest, I was a bit skeptical of innovation labs when we first started doing them, because I was like, are we making just like an innovation ghetto? Like, that's where all the cool stuff happens, and then everyone else just carries on being normal. Like, there's beanbags and coffee machines over here, and there's basically like nothing over here. But what I've really seen work is where an innovation lab becomes a kind of like, it becomes a sort of almost like a beacon for other people in the organization who are like, yeah, they're frustrated, they've wanted to do things differently, but they don't know where to channel their kind of energies to. If you create a sort of beacon within the organization and say, kind of, if the word innovation means something to you, then come here. You start to get all sorts of people come out of the woodwork and show up and come to kind of show and tells and lunchtime learning sessions and be really interested in what's happening. And you, bit by bit, you're building up a network, right, of people who get it, people who are excited about this stuff. And an innovation lab is a great kind of call for those people. Equally, it's a really good way of saying, this is the new, this is how we're going to work from now on. It's a bit like what Tom was talking about, creating a space, creating a bit of a bubble, and kind of going, here is where we work in the open, here is where there are post-its on the walls, here is where we will talk with anyone who's interested about our work, and we won't just kind of close ourselves off. And if you kind of create that new culture and that new way of working in a really visible way within the organisation, it could be quite impactful. But maybe you've done that and you're like, no, we want to do a stop port. Then it is about what we talked about on the panel. It's about embedding teams within the council. It's about bringing people on internally, but also partnering with other supplier organisations who can help you accelerate that change and become a different kind of organisation. You don't need me to talk about this at length, because I think Emma did a really great job with that. Some examples of our work, so make it just a bit more tangible. We are doing some work, well, we did some work in Australia, and now we're actually continuing that work, but over here. And we've done some work, I'm really proud to say, with Wigan Council. Maybe Alison can answer your questions on how it really feels in, in the break or in questions. But we have a tool called Patchwork. It's a very small tool, and it basically solves the problem of if you're a social worker and you go into a family for the first time, you have no way of knowing who else from which other public agency is also working with your family. There might be a health visitor, there might be a police officer, there might be any number of people who are supporting this family, but you wouldn't necessarily know. So with Patchwork, you enter your client's details and then you'll see who else is working with them. And we've implemented this across two states in Australia and in Wigan over here. And what's really interesting is that I think the conditions that make it work, so we've also tried to implement it in other places in the UK and it hasn't done very well. And what I've noticed, I think, is that the conditions that make it work is if it's part of a genuine and embedded change programme that is about changing the nature of frontline social care. And what's exciting is that for us, this is just one small component of what the future of case management looks like. So instead of buying a massive monolithic case management system, which takes like 8 months for any changes to be made to it because it's such a big code base and you know, it has to be kind of rolled out, and social workers have got this terrible reputation for hating technology, but if you use the technology that social workers are given, you would hate technology as well, I promise you. It's not really about that. So what we're thinking is, like, what might the future of case management look like? How do we take the essential parts of case management, separate the data out from it, create a platform where you can kind of switch in and out different parts of whatever a social worker needs? That means the cycle for changing the technology is much quicker. It means that if you don't like one bit, or the policy changes, or the law changes, or you have an officer inspection, you can get rid of a bit and find a better alternative. And so we're starting to think about what might that look, and we're lucky enough to be kicking off a piece of work with Triborough very soon, where we will be actually like prototyping some of this, which is like super exciting because feels like, for me, that's been like my mission for the last 5 years, and we're finally getting the chance to do it. Many of you will have heard about Casserole Club. It's kind of been in the news, I guess. It's a community meal sharing network. If you are cooking and you add in an extra portion, we'll match you with an old person who lives near you. You take the food round, have a chat with them, you check they're okay. You can do it once and never again, or you can do it on an ongoing basis. There is a whole other talk I could give about how difficult Casserole is to run as a service. Maybe you can find me in the break. But suffice to say that it's really popular. We've got 8,000 people signed up to do it, hundreds and hundreds of meals that get cooked on a weekly basis, both here in the UK and in Australia. It's one of the things I'm proudest of, if nothing else, because it means like a bunch of older people getting dinner, and they call their cook their best friend, and that to me is like massive impact. We've done some work around SEN transport, rethinking how we might deliver those services. It's quite involved, but I can talk about it later. And we've also done some work in Salford, not too far away, with young people, where we did a bit of a sort of research piece, to Tom's point about user research. We kind of took it even a step back, so we weren't really focused on what technology will we build. We were actually just focused on what is it like to live in Little Holton, which is a very small part, small area within Salford. The council knew lots and lots about what was wrong in that area, and like, we were really concerned about the outcomes for children and young people, but weren't quite sure where to start with it. We definitely weren't sure what kind of good things were happening in the area, so we did a big research piece. There's lots I could explain, but in summary, it culminated in me last Saturday doing a session with 30 young people for a local school, who were presenting back to their parents and their friends their business ideas that the school has given them space to develop. There's a head teacher at the academy there who's like inspiration. She's starting to think about what if the school was a kind of small business incubator for children instead of the boring place where you go and learn stuff, which I think is really, really exciting. Salford doing some really interesting stuff with young people. So, number one, work out where you're at as an organisation. All this stuff sounds great, but you've got to be realistic about it. And I think if you're, you know, way, way back and you're still kind of fighting the leadership team over this stuff, or you're not getting the buy-in that you want, then you've got to think really seriously about your ambition and work out what your kind of trajectory is, and start small. You know, start small and grow. It applies to changing your organisation as much as it applies to building a service. pick the right approach. Work out whether you want demonstrator projects or you want an innovation lab or you want wholesale doing a stock port. I'm going to kind of coin that, I think, as a phrase. Most importantly, make stuff. It doesn't really matter ultimately what model you choose. If you're delivering things, if you're showing people what good looks like, if you're showing what the models are working look like, if you're showing the outputs from that work, you're showing what users think. That's so important. Like, one of the biggest change mechanisms I've found is just walking into any meeting with a bunch of photos and videos and quotes from service users going, this is awful, and it's my life is ruined because this service is so terrible. You have to be a real jerk to sit in those meetings and say you don't care. So it's kind of like, maybe it's emotional blackmail, I'm not sure, but it's definitely bringing users and their experience right into the heart of conversations that are happening in the organisation. And next time you're in a meeting and you find yourself dropping off, just try and count how many times anyone actually refers to citizens or a citizen or a user and their experiences. It doesn't happen as often as it should, and I think so nobody leave this room without making it your job to be the person who brings that into the room in the next meeting that you're in. Okay, final bit, I promise. Ranty bit, potentially. Like I said at the start, we don't have much time. We're at kind of like a bit of a pivotal moment for lots of reasons. But mostly because half of the country wants something that the other half doesn't. And that is sort of terrifying. We need to be a bit self-reflective about how we've allowed this situation to happen, because I think, you know, local government and central government and actually the EU have a role to play in this as well. So we need to reflect on ourselves as to what we could have done differently. But most of all, we need to recognise that we as local government are uniquely placed to bring communities together, to start to address some of the inequalities, the differences of opinion, and the sort of divides that we've seen, especially in the last year, and do something about it. There isn't really anyone who's better placed to do that than us. So we can't really sit back on this. It's kind of on us now to sort it out. Remember, as we just talked about, you know, nobody's in this job for the money, right? None of us are here for the money. Try and reconnect with why you do this, why it's important to you. Try and connect with people like Margaret and bring her into the room every time you have a meeting. But most importantly, don't ever give up doing this, because everyone's depending on us, no pressure. Thank you.